Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Lives Less Ordinary is the podcast from the BBC World Service, bringing you extraordinary personal stories from around the globe. Search for Lives Less Ordinary wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. Francisco Garcia is on assignment this week in southern Italy.
So I remember it was the 18th of June 2018. I was working in my office and then my phone started to ring.
Antonia Nicolini is a lawyer in the city of Vibo Valentia in southern Italy.
It was a secretary from the prosecutor's office, and they asked me if I was available. They had someone in a prison cell who wanted to collaborate with the state, but they couldn't find a lawyer to work with him.
Partly, that was because of the identity of the man in the cell. He was called Emanuele Mancuso, and he was a member of the 'Ndrangheta, one of the most powerful criminal organisations in the world. In the region of Calabria, the Mancuso family is infamous.
Already three lawyers had been asked, but they'd all refused. They said there was a conflict of interest, but some of them probably feared defending Emanuele.
Antonia, however, felt differently. She'd grown up with two uncles in the Italian military police, and she had experience defending state witnesses. She decided to visit him in his cell.
He seemed very frail, fragile really. I felt like he was someone torn between his family and his desire to pursue justice and break free from them once and for all.
What happened next would help bring hundreds of members of the secretive and close-knit criminal organisation to the stand.
The numbers are staggering. 355 defendants, 400 lawyers and more than 900 witnesses are taking part in a trial,
including members of Emanuele's own family.
Among the accused, 'Ndrangheta boss Luigi Mancuso, aka the uncle.
At the end of 2023, more than 200 people were convicted. It has been called a maxi trial, echoing the legendary mafia trial that concluded in Sicily in 1992. But how much difference has this trial made on the ground? And what will it mean long term for the Calabrian mafia? I'm Francisco Garcia, and I've been trying to understand more about the trial and what it has meant for the high-profile collaborator who has testified against his family.
It's a prestigious family, and I have tainted that. I'm a black mark against them.
For assignment, this is Italy's mafia whistleblower.
Vibo Valentia was a city in ancient Greece, and then the Romans invaded, and then the Normans. And now we're going to see the city's most famous place, the Norman Castle.
Journalist Pietro Comito was born and raised in Vibo Valentia in southern Italy. His enthusiasm for Calabria, its landscape, food and people, is infectious. Once upon a time he even ran to be mayor, but life here hasn't always been easy.
What was it like growing up here?
It was tough. We all learnt hard lessons on the street. Every day felt like a fight. There is a major lack of infrastructure here. There is very little in the way of public transport or places to play sport, and few services for children.
Calabria is a region with one of the highest unemployment rates in Italy and even the EU as a whole. In 2022, it was reported that less than half the population were in work, nearly double the national average. But climbing the hill by the Norman Castle to look at the valley below,
to come from London, we don't see much of this, honestly. This
shows a different side to the region.
Noi abbiamo il mare, abbiamo la montagna.
Here you can see the mountains and the landscape and the sea in the distance. You can see the beautiful olive trees and the grapes.
Italy is the third biggest agricultural power in Europe, and Calabria is a region teeming with fresh produce. The mafia's influence on agriculture, not just in Calabria but across Italy, has been growing steadily. It is now thought to account for around 15% of its total turnover. Pietro points up to the looming building to our right.
Siamo nei pressi del castello.
The castle reigns above everything we see, from here and right across the valley. And it's not a nice thing to say, but for me, this castle represents how Vibo is always under the thumb of different powers. Once it was the Normans, now it's the Mafia. For decades, these territories have been dominated by the 'Ndrangheta. It controls the very heartbeats of people in this place.
'Ndrangheta is thought to mean men of honour, and to have begun around the mid-19th century, when a group of Sicilian outlaws took refuge in the Calabrian mountains. Once the poorest of the three major Italian mafias, alongside the Sicilian Cosa Nostra and the Neapolitan Camorra, it is now one of the richest criminal organisations in the world. Their operation is bankrolled through extortion, weapons trafficking, and most lucrative of all, drugs.
It's a boiling hot morning in Calabria, and I'm standing outside of Giatauro Port, the largest container port in Italy and by extension one of the largest in Europe. There is one entrance going in and one entrance going out. These heightened security measures are because this is one of the key staging posts of the 'Ndrangheta.
So this port is really inside the 'Ndrangheta heartland.
Michele Albanese writes about organised crime. Under state protection, he's flanked by two trim men in dark jackets. This strip of road, the lorries trundling past, is a safe place for him to meet.
When the port was built, it obviously wasn't intended to be used in this way. But then the 'Ndrangheta realized it provided an excellent opportunity for their transport of drugs and cocaine.
The Mancuso family's influence over the port has been critical to their success. And while in recent years the state has taken more measures to tighten up security, the 'Ndrangheta's global operation now stretches far beyond this Calabrian port. They reputedly control 80% of the cocaine trade in Europe, making more than £40 billion a year. And a key reason they've been able to build up so much power lies in their unusual composition.
So the basic unit of the 'Ndrangheta system is the 'Ndrina. And each of these are constituted by father, grandfather, uncle and cousin, family members essentially. They're all in one cell. It's your relatives, your blood. So you'll never betray each other because of this family connection.
And this is why historically, until recently, it's been so much more difficult to prosecute 'Ndrangheta rather than Cosa Nostra or Camorra because of these blood ties.
Yes, since the 1960s, the investigations of the 'Ndrangheta were superficial. The 'Ndrangheta is a closed, hermetic world. When you're baptized by the mafia, you give your life for them. And you know that betrayal can be repaid with death.
I first got in contact with Emanuele Mancuso a couple of years ago, drawn not just to the headlines about a high-profile mafia informant, but also the private drama of his story. Currently under state protection, where he's moved around Italy for his own safety, we speak online and with official permission. With both his father and uncle thought to be leading 'Ndrangheta figures, Emanuele's insight into how the organisation works, the mentality of its members and how it wields power are almost unique because they come from an insider born into one of its most influential families. In my first conversation with him, Emanuele told me he knew his family were different from a young age.
Very slowly I started to become aware of being somebody, of belonging to something both bigger than myself and bigger than the state. I'm talking about power, social power, economic power, power that has links to Italy, Europe and South America.
When was this moment of realisation that perhaps your life, your family's life, was different from your average person in another town?
Indoctrination begins in infancy, but at 12 or 13, I realised the criminal power that my family had. If I threw a brick at a car, no one would say anything to me. At school, when I was naughty, I never got told off. If someone messed with me, I responded with violence. I knew never to ask for help from a teacher. School was an institution, just like the police. I was educated by my family against institutions growing up. I learnt to dominate others, to command, to be untouchable. I was a Mancuso for the local community. The Mancuso family was the state.
Across Calabria, the 'Ndrangheta control everything from hospitals to undertaker services. Their influence felt from cradle to grave. The local administration of Lombardy, where Emanuele grew up, had been repeatedly disbanded because of mafia infiltration, including in 2018.
Hai bisogno di un lavoro.
So if you need a job, the clan finds you the job in a quarter of an hour. If your car gets robbed and you go to the police and ask them to help you, they might find it after a few months, if they find it at all. The Mancuso family will find a stolen car much quicker.
Growing up in a violent criminal family, Emanuele was soon committing crimes himself. At 17, he went to prison for 4 months after assaulting a local businessman. According to Emanuele, there were already differences between himself and his family.
Non bene.
I didn't do well. My brother was also arrested. Everybody respected him. He was a mafia-type person, whereas I felt weak, vulnerable.
When he was 21, he went to Rome to study. It was there that he met someone who would alter the course of his life. Her name was Nancy.
We would see each other 3 or 4 times a day. I fell in love with her over time. Then she became completely involved with my family. She knew everything. She saw everything. She got on with everybody. She was a Mancuso.
In 2014, he set up a lucrative marijuana farm in the hills of Vibo Valentia. And then, on the morning of March 6, 2018, he was arrested. While awaiting trial in prison on charges of extortion and participation in a weapons and drug trafficking criminal association, for which he would later receive a sentence of 4 years and 6 months, he says he fell out with his family over a separate business deal. Alone in his cell, he thought deeply about his criminal life.
The 'Ndrangheta way of life no longer fit me. I didn't identify myself with it anymore.
And there was something else playing on his mind. Nancy was pregnant.
She wrote 6 or 7 letters to me whilst I was in prison. I wrote back saying I wanted to be a father. I wanted to be present. I wanted to change. I thought the baby was going to be a boy and that he would then grow up to be a mafia boss. But I found out it was a girl. That gave me joy. When Nancy came to visit me with her bump, that was a moment of weakness for me. I felt weak.
He began to hatch a plan.
I thought in my head that I will take my baby, I will take my partner, and we will just go, we will just leave. I was convinced that Nancy would come with me. The baby was due between the 15th and the 21st of June, and I decided to collaborate with the state on the 18th.
Emanuele was swiftly moved from prison into police protection and was interrogated by anti-mafia prosecutors for 6 months. He wasn't naive. He knew that by informing on his family, life as he knew it was now over.
Everyone was against me. I lost my mother, I lost my father, all my friends. They started accusing me of being mad, and a lawyer came who tried to verify that I was medically unstable. It's a question of honour. Honour is everything. It's a prestigious family, and I tainted that. I am a black mark against them.
The plane started to shake a little bit, something that alerted us that there was something not right.
Remarkable personal stories told by the people that lived them.
Deep down inside you, you do have courage. You mightn't feel you've got courage. You mightn't feel that you're brave or resilient, but it's there waiting, just waiting to help you get through bad times.
Lives Less Ordinary from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
In the early hours of 19th of December 2019, a huge police raid got underway. Based on years of surveillance, thousands of hours of phone intercepts and key witness statements, including Emanuele's critical testimony, more than 300 people were arrested. Their names were straight out of Mafia Central casting. Blondie, Leg of Lamb, Big Nose, The Wolf. The trial began in January 2021 and brought together multiple long-running investigations. It was named Rinascita Scott, Rinascita meaning rebirth. In November 2023, the first phase of the trial concluded with 207 people sentenced for crimes including criminal association, extortion and bribery.
Together they face a combined 2,100 years in prison.
It's the biggest blow to date to this particular powerful organised crime syndicate.
Mafia experts, however, are a little more cautious in their assessment.
It's a slow burner. It's not that one trial is going to change anything. And here we're only at the first level. But I think it's more its symbolic value to a certain extent. The Andrangheta is not untouchable. It can be targeted. It can be challenged.
Felia Ellum is a professor of organised crime and corruption at the University of Bath.
So the number of people, I think, is important to a certain extent. And also the territory. I think that there was a clear strategy to dismantle that. And I think that that, to a certain extent, has been successful in the sense that that territory has been cleaned.
The raids focused on Viba Valencia, reportedly depriving the Ndrangheta of 70% of their control in the area. Many of the people I spoke to said the city felt safer since the arrests. And where this trial was different to previous Ndrangheta trials was the extent to which it targeted non-mafia individuals. Lawyers, a police officer, a former mayor, an ex-MP from Silvio Berlusconi's party, all were convicted. And yet Emanuele is pessimistic about the impact of the trial. He knows firsthand how adaptable the organisation can be, as well as how deeply ingrained in civic life. He told me through his lawyer,
"There's no doubt that the economic impact to the clan has been devastating, such as paying for lawyers and funding members while in prison. But at the organisational level, I do not believe that anything has changed. For example, using front names for cars and houses, as well as hiding firearms and drugs underground."
For Emanuele, the convictions involving the professional classes, although welcome, also indicate how difficult it will be to challenge Ndrangheta power.
"It is embedded in local government and institutions, which makes it quasi-invisible. Now the Ndrangheta will invest huge amounts of money to counter law enforcement. The organisation will adapt as it always has done."
The current political climate is also a challenge. The Maxi trial of the 80s and 90s, which led to landmark convictions of the Cosa Nostra, is a powerful comparison to our present moment, particularly the laws that were ushered in during that period.
So we have a law in 1991. It allowed these state witnesses to come forward, not even to go to prison, to have a partnership or collaboration with the state where they gave up all the names and all the things that they knew in return for being looked after by the state, having a new name and then eventually some kind of money. But we also have laws that are introduced to confiscate assets, which are really, really important, right? To be able to follow the money, to see where the money's going.
And yet that spirit of optimism, backed up by tangible legal change, has had knockbacks. A bloody backlash against the trial led to the murder of two high-profile anti-mafia prosecutors in 1992. Some of the legal changes of the early 1990s have been significantly rolled back. And at present, Giorgio Meloni's ruling party is set on limiting the use of phone interceptions in court, a move many anti-mafia experts see as curbing the very tools that have recently helped convict so many of the Ndrangheta. For Felia, this is a cycle that Italy continually struggles to escape.
There's this kind of seesaw, which I think is an interesting metaphor of seeing the moments of highs where the anti-mafia is really kind of very strong, very vocal, and is really doing a lot. And then we've got these lows where all of a sudden it just seems as though nothing is happening. And I was thinking before, you know, where are we in this seesaw? And I don't know whether we're in this kind of lull in a way where the political class, not only the Meloni government, you know, the left doesn't necessarily help as much as it could, but the Minister of Justice is proposing laws that are, I think, potentially unhelpful. So we've got this movement that moves up and down constantly.
And yet for those who live in Vibo Valencia, there is still some cause for optimism.
I come from a very special generation of magistrates. I got my degree on the 8th of May 1992, so almost in the period of the tragedy of Capaci.
I meet Camillo Falvo, Vibo Valencia's prosecutor, in a smart office in a courthouse, his security detail at the door. On his wall, alongside medals and award plaques, is a huge picture of prosecutors who've been murdered, including the two judges killed in 1992, one of them on a motorway near the Italian town of Capaci.
We thought everything was finished, there was no hope. But then we got more strength and became inspired by these figures who were killed.
So we're walking through the courtroom in Viba Valencia to sit down to interview in an empty courtroom. You've got the grandeur of the courtroom, the empty benches, and also you've got the kind of metal cages where defendants would be housed.
during a trial. Camillo is cautious about the enduring impact of the trial on such a deeply rooted criminal organisation, but he does believe that the whole operation has had a tangible impact on local criminality and corruption.
There is an index of criminal organisation activities, and Vibo Valencia had one of the highest rates in Italy, but now things are different. Of course, there is no magic wand, but there is new trust in public institutions. One of the things that symbolises this change was the march on the 24th of December, when so many people came to the prosecutor's office and then to the police station to thank the people of the state. That was unimaginable before.
In the aftermath of the police raids, thousands of locals marched through Vibo Valencia. There was music and speeches from victims of mafia violence. For Camillo, it's all part of a wider picture of change in the region.
Before, when you have this kind of operation and 100, 150 people would be arrested, there would be another 100 or 200 coming to take their place. What is important is the change of mentality.
This work comes at a considerable personal cost.
There's a lot of sacrifice. I don't have many opportunities for a social life, let alone leaving the building. I eat with my bodyguards in a small room.
As we're speaking, we can see the physical fact of two cages for defendants, quite imposing steel cages. There's an element, at least, of you feeling part of the sacrifice for your work. Is there a slight feeling of being trapped? Is this worth it for you?
Yes, it's worth it. I'm needed in this territory. For me, the work is beautiful because you see the impact it has on the region and the people here.
It's a really beautiful spring evening in Calabria, and I'm standing at the gate to a bit of agricultural land just outside of Lombardy. On the gate, there's a white banner with bold writing written all over it and a picture of a smiling, really vivacious-looking woman in her early 40s. Her name was Maria Cindamo, and I'm here to meet her brother.
I'm
Vincenzo Cindamo, and we are in Lombardy, in Calabria, in between the provinces of Reggio and Vibo Valencia.
Measuring the impact of the trial on a global criminal organisation is difficult, but it has had an impact for many everyday Calabrians. Vincenzo is one of them. Details given to the police by Emanuele helped flesh out what might have happened to his sister.
My sister Maria was always a lively and determined person. She pursued her studies and became an entrepreneur, got married and had three children.
She lived close to where I'm standing with Vincenzo, in Lombardy, the hometown of the Mancusos.
This land, the one you see here, was Maria's land. It's the only piece of land in this whole area that's not been under Ndrangheta control.
Maria's fields, with their groves of citrus fruits, were attractive to local criminals.
There was the desire by the Ndrangheta to control these properties.
On May 6th, 2016, Maria arrived at the very spot where I'm meeting Vincenzo.
Maria found some people waiting for her here, and these people violently attacked her. We know this because later traces of blood were found on her car and on that wall there.
But those who knew Maria, including Vincenzo, were determined that her life wouldn't be defined by her brutal death.
There's a strong word in Italian. It's femicide, the killing of a woman. I didn't want Maria just to become another story of a femicide. So despite the fact that this place could have been a place of terror, we've tried something different. Each year on the date of the death of Maria, people come here to celebrate a kind of rebirth. Politicians, journalists, locals. It's why this poster is here. Every day, hundreds of mobsters drive past. And every time they do so, they have to see Maria smiling and reminding them of her story, a free woman that opposed them.
Now Maria's land is managed by a cooperative named Goel. Goel sell the land's produce, citrus fruits mainly, as an alternative economy, one untainted by crime. They control more than 350 hectares of Calabrian farmland. A drop in the ocean, really, but a start.
You cannot really say that life here is free, because to be free is a very strong expression, actually. But something has lightened a little.
There has been an improvement, but there is still much work to do.
Tantissimo.
A lot of work.
8 years after her death, there is now a new trial underway investigating Maria's disappearance. That is partly due to the information that came out in the Renascita Scott trial, signs of its tangible impact beyond denting the operations of the Ndrangheta. And yet for all the talk of rebirth and a brave action that has been taken, the Ndrangheta's tendrils are deeply embedded in this land and will be extremely difficult to uproot. Vincenzo's eyes, scanning the road as each car drives past, tell their own story. As does Emanuele's knowledge that, because of his brave decision to testify leading to the arrest of multiple members of his family, he'll be looking over both shoulders for the rest of his life.
They want me to take everything back. That's what they want. They are basically fighting me because they are fighting the state. I represent the state now.
It's not only blood family he lost, but Nancy too. Put into an extremely difficult, potentially dangerous position by his testimony, she didn't follow him into the protection program as he had hoped.
She should have said, I'll follow you, I'll come with you. But she didn't give it time. After I said I'd collaborate, she immediately came with a message from my family. Because I was a Mancuso, she never thought I would think of collaborating with the state and actually go through with it.
I've reached out to Nancy for comment through her lawyers, but I didn't get a response. She has never publicly distanced herself from the Ndrangheta and the Mancuso family. After a six-year custody battle, in 2023, Emanuele gained sole custody of his daughter. He has now asked the Minister of Justice to change their names so they will no longer be Mancusos.
Sometimes I am tired from the daily difficulties and the issues we have. But when my daughter returns from primary school with all her energy and vivacity, I feel less tired.
On my final morning in Vibo Valentia, I return to the hilltop with Pietro Comito. A walking advertisement for the Calabrian good life. He says it is safer than Milan, Rome, London.
Qualcosa di epocale.
The changes at the moment are epochal. When I was a child, people would just disappear. I remember a 10-year-old child vanishing from class one day. I hope that will happen less now.
What is so special about here? What is so special that people need to fight for?
La terra è mamma.
This is my motherland. I can feel the bond so deeply. They say that when you come to the south, you cry two times. First when you arrive, because you are afraid of all the bad things that might happen to you. And then you cry the second time, when you leave, because you feel such a tenderness towards the place. And that's how I feel. People suffer here, but I know that this land can become even more beautiful.
That was Assignment, presented by me, Francisco Garcia, and produced by Anne Adine.
The plane started to shake a little bit, something that alerted us that there was something not right.
Remarkable personal stories told by the people that lived them.
Deep down inside you, you do have courage. You mightn't feel you've got courage. You mightn't feel that you're brave or resilient. But it's there waiting, just waiting to help you get through bad times.
Lives Less Ordinary from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.